Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Liam Garrity, the producer of Rosemary McCabe's How to Be Sound. I just wanted to let you know that my own podcast, Meet Your Maker, a show about the people who make the things we love, is returning very soon. And you'll hear people say things on it like...
In fact, you know, you're transporting what are classed as low explosives, so there's all sorts of paperwork to be done.
That is an Irish company that has taken over the store in Times Square. It was... mad, and it's great.
She knows we fucked. I mean, she's not stupid, but yeah, I didn't tell her what it was called. I have no idea if she might know, but I'm just like, yeah, she would get upset about it. I don't want to fucking make her mad.
That's all coming up in 2 weeks' time, which means this is a great opportunity to binge listen to the first 13 episodes if you haven't heard them. And one of them is a finalist at the New York Festival's International Radio Awards next week. Just search for Meet Your Maker wherever you listen to podcasts or meetyourmaker.ie.
And welcome to How to Be Sound, your fortnightly guide to being that little bit better at your everyday life. Hosted by moi, Rosemary McCabe. That was my Miss Piggy imitation, which is really bad, and I'm never going to do that again. In this episode, I'll be talking to Kirsty McDermott, co-founder of Beaut.ie, former editor of Stellar Magazine, beauty guru, cat lady, and content queen, about the future of content both online and off. But first, some updates. If you've listened to this podcast before, you'll know that I have a Patreon account, but what you may not know is that I've lowered the barrier for entry. And you can now start your donations at $1 a month, which is about 89 euro cents, which will guarantee you membership of the How to Be Sound book club, plus it'll give you access to Patreon-only content. I'm basically going to be using it over the next while to upload some writing that I've been working on, so if you like the podcast, or you like my writing, or you just like me, or a combination of all three, it would be great if you would support me financially by donating that minuscule amount of money, and you can do that at patreon.com/howtobesound. Secondly, let's talk about ads. I've done the odd few ads on How to Be Sound, and I am 100% up for doing more. Give me money. If you have a company that you'd like to expose to my listenership, really sound people, around 90% of whom are women and 80% of whom are based in Ireland, drop me an email at rosemary.mccabe@gmail.com with an A in my Mac. Now, let's get on with the show. Kirsty.
Hi.
Welcome to our high-tech studio.
It is incredibly high-tech.
I'm sure this isn't what you're expecting from your How to Be Sound experience.
Oh, I've worked in the Irish media. It's absolutely perfect.
We are mad professional. When I first started the podcast, I decided I'd ask every guest if they remembered where we first met. Right? And then I totally forgot about that idea. Mm. And then I remembered it again when you were coming on. So I want to know, what do you remember?
Oh my God. It's probably one of the blogger meetups, one of Damien Mully's blogger things, isn't it?
It was in Arnott's when I was your stan, like super fan.
I thought you meant my cat.
No,
I was like, what?
No.
Really?
I was in a cat costume and mm-hmm. I was like swiping other cats. No, it was in Arnott's when you and Aisling were doing an event for, I think it was the first Beaut.ie book.
Oh yeah, okay.
And I think I'd gone along with my mom. And I think I'd either bought tickets or I'd like put my name down and been, like I'm not sure if they were paid for, if they were free.
I remember it was for the first book, yeah. And it was around Christmas time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the two of us went along and you guys were there. I think your mom was there.
Yeah, she
was. And I remember, because I think at the time I was probably still in college or I just started maybe working in production at the Irish Times. And I just remember thinking that you were both very glamorous.
Well, you weren't wrong. Like,
no,
in
I
fairness,
wasn't.
You weren't wrong. Look at me now.
And you were wearing fabulous lipstick, which a habit you've maintained until this day.
Do you like
47
lipstick?
Years later.
Fuck off.
That makes me look bad as well. Obviously, our relationship has gone from strength to strength.
Yes, it has. It has grown and flown.
And we can talk about our time working on top of and under one another, respectively.
Christ.
Kirsty was the top in that relationship.
Were you the power bottom, Rosemary?
No, I was a versatile bottom. Let's go back a little bit. Mm. You first set up Beaut.ie with Aisling, like way back when.
2006.
And what was the landscape like when you first set up Beaut? you know, did angry you think it would end men. Up being a job?
No, it was angry men. That's what it was. Angry men who
you were angry men or the landscape was
the
angry?
The landscape was angry men. And they were unbelievably sexist. And then we had a couple of champions in people like Andrew, who was 20 Major at the time, and Damien Mully, who were both always really supportive of us.
Oh, yeah, 20 Major is a ride, isn't
oh,
he?
Oh, he's an absolute ride. Hi, 20 Major. And a really nice guy, really sound man as well. They were very much on our side in terms of what we were doing. But then there was this just very kind of neckbeardy type.
Something daddy, wasn't it?
Oh, God, I can't remember who he was, but he was just this owl lad who really hated the pair of us because he thought that we weren't doing blogging right. When it turns out we were actually doing blogging much better. So it started as a hobby, really. It was something I wanted to do because I was working as a web designer at the time. And I thought, you know, this would be a nice thing to do as kind of a personal project on the side, because I probably wasn't getting to do a lot of the sort of things I wanted to do within my day job. And it was my idea, and I asked Aisling, would she do it with me? And it just kind of took off from there because there wasn't anything like it at the time. Mm. And it was very much, the landscape at the time was very much, people were pissed off with women's magazines. They were lazy. There was a lot of shilling in them. A lot of what is happening right now, it's amazing how things have come 360, to be honest
with you. A
lot of
what's
you.
Happening right now in blogging.
Within blogging, or within influencing, was very much how the media landscape was being seen at the time. So blogging was very, very fresh. And as a result of that, I think, and also as a result of the fact that we were the earliest adopter, that was me, everyone, meant that we had an audience really, really fast. And we had these whopper figures really fast as well. Mm. We were getting like 20,000 people looking at the site a day really quick. And so it became apparent that we were going to be able to make some money off it. Yeah. Not in the way that people are making money now, but from affiliate links, which we always declared. I have to say, we were always just... It never occurred to us to not declare all that stuff because...
But you know what? I think that might be because of the difference in kind of sentiment towards bloggers then versus now.
Yeah.
But obviously then you were the guys who were coming in and doing the honest reviews, and you were the guys people trusted, whereas magazines were selling out. Whereas now people think bloggers are selling out. So they're very like, oh, another affiliate link. Whereas back then they were like, great, I'm happy for you to get commission.
Yeah.
I think.
They were. I think all the way through this entire process, which I kind of feel like I've been there from the wild, wild west. Like, I started working in web design around 97 when there was very few.
It was like GeoCities.
Yeah, it really was an angel fire. So I feel like I've kind of been here all the way through it. And it still is the wild west in a lot of ways. And there is still a long way to go for regulation to happen and for people to really feel like they're not getting ripped off in so many different ways. Websites used to cost tens and tens of thousands of pounds or euro for not a lot. And you know, that has changed. And then apps started to cost a huge amount of money. And then that has changed. And now you're getting people charging like so much money for a photograph on Instagram.
Yeah.
There's actually not really a huge amount of justification for that. Well, there isn't in a lot of ways, to be honest.
I'm like
with
widening
you.
My eyes, going, "Shut up, Kirsty!" Well, if I want to charge someone, I work for an agency,
and there isn't, to be honest. So, I think,
like from the point of view of somebody who does occasionally charge people to put photos on Instagram, I think it depends on whether or not you can go forward and go, you know what, I did this with this brand, and they got this amount of engagements, and like this, like not just engagement, but
it's qualifying
the sales.
What's the KPI, and you know what was the ROI on the activity? It's all that stuff. There's nothing wrong with making money. There is something wrong with taking the piss.
Yeah,
and that's where we are at the moment.
And what kind of money were you? So like back in the day with Beaut, what was your main revenue from? Because I know you had your full-time job, so that was probably your main revenue for most of the time.
Yeah.
But then once you started getting, like once it started gaining traction, was it banner ads? Was it competitions?
Yeah, we made money off banner ads. We had an agency. But like banner was never a massive amount of revenue because banner doesn't make you a lot of money because it's sold on a case of clicks per thousand and it's tiny and it's diminishing
and
it all the time.
Back then.
Yeah, it would have been bigger then, but to be honest, I don't remember what the figures were. So we made money on banner. We made some money on affiliates. Sales, and then we would have made. I'm trying to even think how. Then we'd work with brands, like we'd launch a new product with a brand, and we'd invite our readers to run competitions.
Events, I remember.
But the one thing that we would never ever do was sell reviews, and we were constantly asked to do that. Sorry, but that flies in the face of any editorial integrity you ever want to have. You've completely lost it straight away if you were going to take money off a brand to review something. It's never going to be honest. So that was, we were constantly asked to do it, but we had enough savvy and editorial integrity ourselves to go, no way. I mean, we were asked to do stuff all the time, but it wasn't It was about the money, obviously, because I was making a living from it partly at one point. So I needed to make sure my income was there, but not to the extent where I was going to just do anything.
Yeah,
definitely not for either of us. And we used to turn down things all the time. Like, we were asked at one point to be the faces of a new Irish beauty website, like a transactional one, sort of, you know, one that would be selling in all sorts of different brands. And we just said no because we felt that it would compromise us too much.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas that's the kind of thing that people do all the time now without even thinking about it.
But I mean, at that point, did you have a background in journalism? Had you been writing at that point already?
No.
Oh, interesting. Because
no, I have a design degree. I went to NCAD.
Because I always thought that you had been writing before that, and I was always like, well, Kirsty was a journalist.
No.
Because, you know, kind of the excuse that I make for a lot of the younger bloggers now is that I'm like, well, they've never done anything else. They've come from school or maybe from college. They don't have any work experience. They don't have experience of having a boss. They don't have experience of being answerable to someone else.
Well, bear in mind,
they don't have anyone telling them what the guidelines are.
I was 32 at the time.
Yeah,
I had been in the workforce for about 10 years. I had always worked in creative industries where I was answerable to clients. And I was used to having pushback from people. And I've never understood why people won't take criticism.
Yeah.
Never.
And I mean, you were also a magazine reader.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that makes a huge difference too, that they're obviously a whole swathe of
20-somethings.
No, Rosemary,
just a reader in general. Yeah.
Well,
you know.
But, you know, there are obviously a whole swathe of 20-something bloggers who don't read magazines, who don't read journalism, and who don't really put the pieces together.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, you need to actually be consuming stuff outside of your own sphere of influence. You know, you need to be widening your own. And this is only fashion and beauty at the end of the day. It's very easy to get really head up about so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that, and it's a bloody outrage. And yeah, it is an outrage, but it's also an outrage within a microcosm.
Yeah.
You know, it is just fashion and beauty at the end of the day.
Although fashion is the second biggest industry in Europe,
Fashion is probably one of the biggest global industries.
Yeah.
It employs millions of people worldwide, and it's really easy to dismiss it because it's fluffy.
Because it's a woman's thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it is a massive industry.
I mean, obviously men have to wear clothes too, so I'm not saying fashion isn't for
It's
you,
also fraught with huge injustices, and
of
it's
course,
very problematic
yeah.
and all that stuff, but it's still a massive global employer. So yeah, it is unfair to just dismiss it. And it tends to be dismissed. And one of the things that struck me as being massively unfair was that we were being dismissed by, you know, we used to get all this criticism, especially on Twitter, which would have been the dominant social media platform at the time, you know, around...
It was hugely active.
Yeah, 2006,
in Ireland specifically,
2007.
Yeah.
By all these guys who were mad into gaming and football. And you're just like, fuck off.
Like,
you're in no way superior. Also, you are in no way superior just because you like this particular thing, and I happen to like, and actually I like loads and loads of different things, tons of different things. I just don't happen to talk about them all the time.
You know what's really interesting to me at the moment, and I know we said that we wouldn't maybe wouldn't talk about this, and now I'm going to talk about it, is that men who love football are very scathing about people who like Love Island.
I think
there's nothing better morally about watching football
than there is
watching Love Island.
Like, this isn't a zero-sum game, and I think people forget this. And I know I'm always talking about zero-sum games, but...
I like it.
I like it too, because it's a really good way of explaining one thing is not equal to the other.
Yeah.
You can actually like all this stuff, and it doesn't make you a better or worse person than the other.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, you can be pissed off that somebody in the office made a joke about women being in the kitchen while also acknowledging that women in Iran are being stoned to death. You know what I mean? That, like, those aren't on the same level. When people go, like, you give out about injustices in Ireland, why don't you try living in the Middle East? You're like, well,
see, that is just reframing the argument in a really unhelpful way. Like, just fuck off with yourself, actually. You know, piss off. That stuff is so, so annoying.
Yeah.
And it's always done by somebody who just doesn't want to engage.
Yeah, well, I mean, who doesn't have an argument for what you're talking
Absolutely
about?
Absolutely not.
And that's the only thing they have.
Yeah.
But let's get back to you, Kirsty.
Okay, great.
After Butte.ie, what happened then? Like, where did you go after that? You had established a name for yourself at that point as a writer, hadn't
you? So basically, within about 10 months of starting the site, I was approached by Image to do a maternity cover of their beauty gig, which is the beauty editor gig in the country. So I went in and did that for a year. But the site was really taking off after that, so I left and focused on being freelance. And I was freelance for about 4 years, I think. And
did you get a mortgage while you were freelance?
No.
Oh, that
no,
would be an
I didn't.
Inspiring tale. Go on.
No, I didn't. I got a mortgage at 29, so before I even started
Oh,
Beauty.
Oh, God.
I know.
Worse.
Yeah, sorry, Rosemary.
Damn it.
But on a very small flat, like tiny little flat, which we lived in for 12 years. So all the way through the crash until we could save to get out from under
it. The heady days of your 20s
Yeah,
and 30s.
I know. But anyway, there you go. Look, it's not all definitely not a tale of an influencer.
It's not all sunshine and marble dining room tables from Harvey Norman, is it?
Oh my Christ, it absolutely is not. So after Butte, which I left in March 2012, because I am the kind of person that needs to be doing different things, and I really felt like I wasn't going to be able to keep moving on with it. I wanted to do something different, and after I left, I was then offered the job of deputy editor at Stellar, which I did for a year, and then I got the editorship at Stellar, and I was there for two more years, and you were obviously my deputy then in that first year of my editorship.
I was your power bottom.
You were my power bottom, Rosemary. And then after that, I was highly, keenly aware I needed to go back to digital, because I think you can be very print oriented, and it's not such a good thing, even though print is my absolute dream. I love it the most, I think, though my writing career, I suppose my words career, would have started within blogging. I needed to get back to hone those digital skills, because I have to, well, I'd be thinking very much about the future.
Yeah.
You know, where am I going to go? What's next?
Especially within... And it's such a narrow field within print,
yeah,
especially
is.
In Ireland.
Within this industry. And a former boss of mine, a woman called Karen Hess, who I'd worked for on a part-time basis when I was freelance at a company called Difflin, had started a new content media company. So I went back to work for her as her head of content. So I've been there for about 18 months. And since the beginning of this year, I've been kind of doing my job, and also I've been kind of looking on, I've been sort of working on House and Home magazine as well, so I've got a bit of magazine work in the mix as well, which I really love, actually.
Yeah, so you get to do your two things that you're interested in and passionate about.
And then in the middle of all of that kind of freelancy stuff over the last few years, I've been lecturing. I worked on the Sunday Times. I worked in the Sun for a bit. I worked for the Tribune. I worked for the Herald. So I've done actually so many different things over the years.
And you had your own side, Frill Seeker.
I did. I still have it, which I'm still hoping
update. You're going to.
Yeah. You know what, though? You kind of get to a point where I was so hyper busy, over busy, where I had three jobs, one of which was a full-time job, which was Butte, because... And people didn't realise any of this stuff at the time, because neither Aisling or I were ever into talking about ourselves publicly. But because Aisling was unwell, I would have taken on most of the burden there. So that was a full-time job for me. And then I was doing two other jobs as well, because I needed the income, basically. So they would have been part-time things that I would have just done in on top. So, I was so hyper-busy for so long that now I kind of really like having my weekends to myself.
Yeah.
And actually, I find that I really like Instagram as a microblogging platform. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it is actually really nice.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think you, without trying to, have kind of built up a following and built up a level of engagement.
Oh, my 5,000 followers. Yeah.
Micro influencing. No, but I mean, you get more responses to your stories, from what I can see, than I do with 40,000. Do you know what I mean? And I've tried really hard to build my following, whereas you haven't.
Yeah, but
so it's different.
That's actually an accepted metric. I look at those kind of things at work all the time. Actually, the bigger your reach, the less, the less engagement you get. So that's actually the way it goes. You will get more engagement at 5,000 than you will at 40,000. And at 100,000, it's down to under 1%.
Yeah,
so
it's
when
mad,
I,
isn't
when
it?
I, yeah, I know. And this is one of the reasons why I kind of have to laugh when I see people complaining about this stuff on, maybe various platforms online. That's what happens. This is kind of one of those things that happens. It is what it is, People feel less, they feel less connected to you. They feel less able to talk to you. They feel more disenfranchised from you when you have more followers. And it is what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think as well, in Ireland, if you look at people who have an awful lot of followers, their growth in followers has coincided with a growth in perceived income. Because you can see them now buying more expensive things. They live in bigger houses.
Yeah.
And that creates a distance between you and your followers, who then, for better or worse, kind of resent...
Yeah, they absolutely
the
do.
That you're now quote unquote rubbing in their faces.
Yeah, which, and you maybe had no intention of doing that. It's very unfair in a lot of ways, but it absolutely happens. And it kind of maybe is a bit of a lesson to not share so much of yourself with people.
Yeah.
But also, that's how people get to where they are now. That's what people like.
Yeah.
We are in the era of the personal influencer.
They want to know exactly what you're doing,
yeah,
but not if it's something that they can never do.
Yeah.
Can never do.
And if you came from the girl next door, sort of situation, but you're better looking than the girl next door, but it still feels attainable. That's a really good hook for somebody to follow. The psychology of it's really obvious, actually. And then all of a sudden, you start buying Gucci, and you were buying pennies. it's really easy to see why people would turn on you.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right. I obviously don't, but I completely understand why it happens, or I see why it happens.
Yeah, like in an ideal world, we would all be happy for everyone else, but we're only human, so sometimes you go, fuck's sake.
Well, I don't, Rosemary.
I'm looking sceptical. So you've worked obviously in print and in online, but one of the conversations that I have a lot with people is to kind of go like, what's a really good women's site in Ireland? And why do you think we're still not really getting it? Or do you think we're still not really getting it?
I think one of the reasons why, this is probably a criticism just in general of media here, is that budgets just aren't there.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to do with the quality of the people that we have. I think there's some really amazingly talented people working within Ireland. I think actually Irish Radio, for example, is some of the best radio in the world. It's really, really wonderful. No, but it is actually, and you will always get people saying that. But we have really talented people who are massively overstretched. And it's very, very hard to, you know, to really plan things properly when you're reacting all the time. So I don't think that, you know, we're necessarily bad at what we do. I just think there's too few people working on the sites that there is.
Yeah.
And they're not resourced well enough. You know, I mean, if you look at some of the sites in the UK, like some of the magazine sites are not great. So what are we comparing against exactly? Like, not everything can be a Refinery 29.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. That pool. Like, when I think about a good magazine site, I'd go to Refinery 29 to go, what am I going to read today? Like, they have some really good features. They have some really excellent long reads.
Yeah.
But then when you think about Ireland, you might have max four people working full time on a magazine site, if even.
Absolutely. I mean, then, that would be a luxury.
Yeah. And then how are you going to write your long reads? How are you going to research your features? Because you have to write 12 pieces a day.
No one's been given the luxury of that time.
No.
But the same goes on print media. No one's been given the luxury of that time anymore because they don't have it. I mean, you know, on even things like The New Yorker or, you know, those kind of very, you know, long read type publications in the US, people would be paid a proper salary to write three or four pieces a year. And like, that doesn't really happen anymore in stuff like The Atlantic. And that's a real shame, because if we're not investing in quality journalism, we're not going to get quality journalism. And also the other thing that happens as well with online stuff is what invariably will happen is stuff won't get written if it's not getting read. So if you're going through the metrics and you're looking at, oh, well, that really amazingly intelligent piece we wrote about that really cool artist only got read 50 clicks. Well, then we're not going to write any more of that. But the thing about Kim Kardashian got 50,000 clicks. It's a no-brainer, you know?
And that's that age-old thing that if you're somebody who comments on Facebook and goes, why is this a story? Comment on the pieces that you want to see.
Yeah.
Don't comment on the pieces about Kim Kardashian. Don't comment on the pieces about people from Love Island. Don't comment on the clickbait. Comment on the features that you're going, I'm really glad somebody got paid to write this and I want to see more of this.
But I just don't think that connects. You see, we work in the media, so you understand that. And I keep drilling this into my team all the time. Stop downloading things. Stop thinking that it's free. You work in a content business. Therefore, you need to understand that all content needs to be paid for. That means buying books, buying magazines, not downloading like video content and shows. I never do that, actually. I know that makes me sound really pure, but I refuse to do it because it has to be paid for somewhere. And if it's not getting paid for on the end, on the consumer end, then there is no money to fund it on the other end.
But do you do Netflix, like?
Yeah, I pay for Netflix. Netflix. I pay for Spotify, which is a crap way to pay for music.
Yeah.
Because I have always, always bought records. But I decreasingly buy records these days and I just pay for Spotify. I have a huge amount of digital magazine subscriptions that I pay for. And like, there's a bag of magazines over there I just lugged in with me because I need to go home and read them for research that I bought this week. But you have to pay for the content you want to consume. If you just want to download stuff, then be prepared for there to be nothing in a few years' time.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be the content apocalypse.
Yeah, well, I mean, by that same token, don't pay for the people you think are crap. But if there are people you think are good, then find ways to support them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you want that kind of stuff to last, if you basically... I mean, I was reading a piece today everything has turned into the Kardashians. Like, 10 years ago, we would have looked at them and gone, they're ridiculous, and they dress ridiculous.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ridiculously, and their bodies are like Barbie dolls, and now every single Boohoo, yeah, Pretty Little Thing, Misguided, yeah, Topshop, all of the ads look like Kardashians.
But there's a reason for that, because people respond to it.
People just love the Kardashians.
They absolutely love them, and they really want to consume everything that there is to do with them.
I want to be a Kardashian.
It's mental.
You touched on something there that I wanted to ask you. Do you still buy magazines?
Yes.
You obviously do, but yeah, like, do you still buy magazines not just for research? And which magazines do you buy?
Oh, I have a subscription. I have a Zinio account, and I have a subscription to around 10 or 12 different magazines. So I have loads of interiors ones that I would research for work, but then I still, Cosmo US is my guilty pleasure. I love Cosmo. That's an amazing magazine.
Why guilt?
Oh, it's not guilty. No, it's just.
Is it because of the sexy?
No, it's because it's probably like I'm way too old for it. It's just beautifully produced, like so, like feature packed. The design of it's absolutely gorgeous. I just really, really like it. Cleo was one of my favourite magazines of all time.
It's Australian. Isn't it?
It's gone. Yeah, such a shame. It was Kerry Packer title. It was a wonderful magazine, but it went about 2 years ago. It was one of my favourite magazines ever. It was an amazing magazine. I loved it. And then what else do I subscribe to? Like loads of Australian magazines, because they're brilliant. Australia does really, really good magazines. Australia's Home and Gardens is wonderful. There's one called Better Homes, I think, that I really like. And just loads and loads of stuff. L Deco Australia is really good as well.
I would never have thought of Australia.
No, Australia makes great mags. Beautiful light. Just seems to,
it, honestly, that's it.
Like everything just looks so good.
Beautiful sunshine.
Beautiful light.
So do you think, I mean, I know you're not a clairvoyant, are you? Do you think magazines will survive?
Yes, I do think magazines will survive. But I think magazines will survive within niche, and I think that they will survive within the realm of branded content. So I think there's absolutely a future for magazines, but I think that we need to start, we'll start to see magazines being done differently. I mean, that's already happening. And there has been a huge surge in independent magazines in the last number of years. More independent magazines have appeared than in maybe the last 10 years than have appeared in any period since. So, but what's shrinking is the consumer magazines that we have known and loved on our newsstands. Like Glamour has gone. Mm. Look went recently.
Well, Glamour's now biannual, isn't it? Biannual.
Yeah, and it was a kind of and actually I did buy it. It was a beauty issue the last time, and it was kind of it was a bit odd actually, but you know,
but they're obviously still figuring out what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, or maybe it was just a way to satisfy the advertisers. Who knows? So if it appears again, then whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a company went, and that was they had done a really nice job with that actually, and then it just disappeared. Mm-hmm. So magazines are just shrinking all of the time. But the ones that are shrinking are the ones where it's very easy to get their content online. So the kind of fashion, beauty, gossip, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think you can replicate Chat and Take a Break. I just think they're going to stay. Also, the ones where maybe their audiences are aging and there's no similar audience, like the Radio Times, the RTÉ Guide, I don't think they're going to last forever either. Because why do you need...
Remember, we all used to buy the RTÉ Guide at Christmas.
Yeah.
Religiously every single year.
Is there necessarily a need for a title like that going into the future?
No, I mean, similar to Glamour, when you think about it, the Glamour was very celebrity news, like, you know, fashion trends, all stuff that you're going to get 2 weeks ahead online. So
you don't need it. Yeah. I mean, like, and that was kind of Look's downfall, and it'll probably be Grazia's downfall as well. Because, you know, you're looking at some sort of celebrity strap line on Grazia and you're like, but sure, I knew that last week.
Yeah, so, 5 days ago.
Because it went to press last, you know, so it had to, of necessity.
And I mean, they probably are tightening their press turnovers. You know what I mean? That they probably are going to press on a Thursday and coming out on Monday, but it's still too long when everything's so instant.
But what is actually increasing in, what is doing well in magazines is luxury. And one of the reasons for that is because people who have a lot of money to spend are willing to invest or willing to buy a magazine to look at it. And you can see that across things like Love, and you can see it across Vogue. And Porter is a really, really good example of this. So Porter grew from an e-commerce business. It grew from Net-a-Porter.
Yeah.
And that is like a bizarre thing to have happen now in the age of magazine shrinking, for an e-commerce business to launch a magazine and to have
it
increase.
Yeah, it does seem backwards, doesn't
10%
it?
10% year on year, Porter has increased in circulation. So it's actually doing phenomenally well. ASOS is another example of an e-commerce brand that launched a magazine. That is, people fight to get that magazine, and one of the reasons why it's so covetable is because you can't buy it. You have to be a premium subscriber to get it. So there's all these examples, like Acne Paper is another example of that. So where brands are putting their customer first is a really good way, is a good example of where magazines are going to go. It's marketing essentially, but it's content marketing. And I think that's one of the reasons why magazines maybe 10 or 12 years ago were dying, is because they weren't talking to their reader. They were talking down to their reader. Nobody wants to be talked down to. They want to be understood.
They want to have a conversation.
They want to be given really useful content that is relevant to them. So one of the things when I was looking at House and Home in January was to put more people into that magazine, to put lots more tips into it, stuff that is expert, that is going to give you a lot of interesting and useful advice if you are on that home buyer or home renovation journey, because that's what a magazine should do.
Yeah.
It should provide you with something, lots of things actually, that are very valuable to you, so that you are
kind of harking back to the day when people read magazines, cut out things and put them on their fridge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That your mom would always have a recipe from a magazine that you could then have something on, you know, on the fridge that I'm going to do that with the living room. Here's a really good idea for book storage.
But you have to really understand your user, your user persona. That's that marketing term. But like, a lot of magazines are marketing. Do you remember we had a user for Stellar? We had a reader, and she was Sarah, and she was 27, and that was a piece of work I did when I started, because I had done a lot of marketing over the years of like doing beauty, and I think maybe that piece is missing with a lot of this generation of bloggers and influencers, because it's very much about them. It's not about what they can offer their reader or their viewer. They don't really care about that, possibly. I mean, I'm sure some of them do. I can't generalize because I don't really know.
No,
but I was highly focused as a blogger on... I'll just talk over you there, Rosemary.
Yeah, no. But I mean, just like, as a blogger, I think you're not going into blogging thinking, what can I give people? There is an ego and narcissism thing that you're going, what can I share? Like, what of me would be of interest?
I think, what can I get maybe? Sometimes. And I don't think we were that bothered about it.
But you probably didn't get as much stuff as they get now either.
No, can I tell you, when I was Images Beauty Editor, I used to get so much stuff. And when I did Beauty, I used to get so much stuff. And it all diminished over the years.
Oh.
I used to get bucket loads of things. But like, lipstick.
What was the best free thing you ever got?
Oh, I went on a... well, this can turn into like, what was the best... When was the best... press trip. I went on a press trip with Nivea once, where I was flown on to Hamburg and then put on a cruise ship, and Rihanna was flown on, and she did a 20-minute set.
And like, did she have to talk to you?
No, she never talked to me personally.
But, no, but I mean, she didn't have to schmooze, like.
No, and then they flew her back off again, and the entire German football team was on the boat as well, and it just sailed up and down the Delft for a night, and then we all went home again.
I'm kind of more excited about the German football team than I am about Rihanna, to be honest.
Well, I didn't know who they were.
Well, I mean, neither would I, but I'm sure they had great calves.
That was pretty good anyway. That was a good one. Oh, there's been millions of things. I can't even think.
On the future of print, where do you think bloggers fit in? Do you think they do? Will bloggers survive, or will they all be unveiled and it'll all be over?
No, I think the regulation is going to come. I mean, do you remember, like, this is to completely like look at a totally different industry. There was a time probably 20 years ago when electricians were complete cowboys, and then regulation. No, seriously, I often liken bloggers to electricians, right? Because that industry got completely regulated, and they all have to be a member of a certain group, which I now completely forget the name of. But if you, it's Recce or something, I can't remember it now. But if you don't get an electrician who's a member of that group, then they're an absolute cowboy. So I think regulation is coming, and the ASAI just don't seem to be doing it quite right yet, but they are going to have to be regulated, because if, you know, lots of people are crap at their jobs, quite frankly. But generally, they work with other people who are going to sit them down and give them tasks and you know, bring them up to speed. And,
but also, even if they don't have bosses, they have colleagues who like that will sit them down and go, you know, that piece of work that you did, you know what I was thinking? Wouldn't it be a little bit smarter if we turned it around like this? Or have you seen that this person's actually already done this, so let's do this? Or, you know, that thing that you agreed to do for this person? Here, why don't you not do that? Because that's... totally.
But in fairness, Rosemary, if you were somebody who was, you know, you were gorgeous looking and you were doing really well, and
I was gorgeous looking,
well, obviously we both are. But you know what I mean. And your Instagram was taking off, and you were getting approached by brands left, right, and centre, and no one had ever turned around to you and gone, "That's not how you spell that. That's atrocious. That's really lazy and sloppy."
I'd be happy as Larry. So, taking the money.
I really have to say, like, I think that it's very unfair a lot of the time that I really have to say that a lot of you know, criticism gets leveled at bloggers when actually there's a responsibility on agents, very much on agents, who get left out of this conversation a lot of the time, and on brands to actually police the stuff. Why are like, if I was commissioning a blogger to do some work, or anyone in fact, I'd want to see mood boards. I'd want to get the gist of what they were planning on doing, so I could go, no, that's not what I want. I want it like this. I would want to see the suggested copy beforehand so I could proofread it. Like, where's the quality control?
You would be a nightmare client.
I wouldn't, actually. I'd make sure that they worked, and they got a professional piece of work out of it as well. Because that's what a responsible agency should be doing. So I don't really understand this. Like, don't be letting people off loose to create content for your brand, you know, without actually doing any checks and balances.
You know,
that seems really irresponsible.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it is because it's just also new. So everyone's just going, let's just throw money at this, instead of thinking, like, how can we create something good that's going to, you know, that's going to provide value for people as well as getting value for us. They're just going, let's just put up a picture of her drinking that drink. And it'll be grand. You know what I mean? You know, there's just
I do, yeah. But there's no strategy. The problem is there is absolutely no strategy. Like, a blog isn't a content strategy. It absolutely is not. It is not a content strategy. It is a part of a content strategy. And asking somebody to just do a Snapchat, which is gone the next day, so you can never measure anything from it, is completely ridiculous. It should go hand in hand with a blog post, with an Instagram, with a Facebook, with a series of things where they're running a mini campaign for you, and then at least you're going to get some bang for your buck, and you can go into your you know, your marketing meeting that month and go, well, we did this and we got that from it, and the ROI of it was this, and we don't think actually that worked that well, and maybe we won't do it again, or that was brilliant and we're going to look for something similar. And you're seeing an awful lot of, like, really badly placed people working for brands that then are quite off. They might have a very quick return in an uplift in sales temporarily, but
for those 24 hours.
Yeah, but then it's off-putting because they're not maybe right for the brand and that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, and I think there's also a lack of kind of forethought in going, how can we work with this person for 6 months? Instead of going, let's do a campaign this week, and then they do a similar campaign for a totally different brand in the same bracket next month, and then the audience is going, well, you know, she was loving that tan last month and now she's loving this tan, it looks stupid.
Exactly, and are promoting one chemist group one week and then promoting another. But, like, that's down to the brand, who should be saying, we want an exclusion zone around this. We don't want you to mention anybody else for 3 months.
Yeah, but they obviously won't do that because that's much more expensive as well. So, like, if you say to a blogger, okay, well, we want to work with you for a year, we want you to be exclusive, that suddenly becomes five figures.
Then the net result is that people are pissed off and they're giving out about you online. So, like, what's it worth? What's it worth to you, basically? And, like, I have seen some really good examples of brand content. We talked about one recently, actually, Holly White, who I love and think is fantastic. She did a really good piece with Dyson over their air purifier.
Oh, yes.
And it was very good. It was very natural. And that's the way branded content should be.
Yeah.
It should be a piece of work that feels natural, is value to the reader, value to the brand, and value to the blogger themselves. And that's the only way that branded content should work. And actually, I love branded content. I'm incredibly passionate about it, if it's possible to feel sexually attracted to advertising.
When it's good, you know, so I'm going, oh my god, that's perfect, like that person, like Holly White, or even like Holly White working with Yonka, because she's all about kind of natural,
absolutely
skincare, and
but she's clearly savvy enough to know the brands she shouldn't be working with, and I think maybe that isn't so apparent in some other,
but you know what, she's also older.
Yeah, and she's worked
in
the media.
She's also my age, you know what I mean?
She's also worked in the media, so she knows what she's at.
You know, Holly White was Bex and Dan and Bex.
I do know that.
Would you ever go back to blogging?
Not full time, no. I mean, I would like to think that I will do some blogging again at some point, but I was saying to you, I do actually enjoy having my weekends. Like, I need to spend time with Stan and Boo, Rosemary. You know, Stan and Boo are quite demanding of my time.
Those are Christy's cats.
They are my cats, yeah. You can follow them on my Instagram, which is at Christy McDermott.
We're about to get to that part. You've totally jumped the gun.
Sorry, Rosemary, you can edit that out.
And are you going to bring Thrill Seeker back or no?
Well, like, it exists. I got it had been a Drupal website, which I had had made by a friend of mine, so that I could do all these really like fancy things with pages and like galleries and stuff. And then it was just a nightmare to maintain. So I got him to redo it into a WordPress site last year, and then promptly wrote two things and then didn't do anything with it again. So, yeah, I mean, my hope is that I will. But I am actually quite enjoying, like, I mean, I've had not a particularly fun year so far. So mm-hmm. I've kind of been enjoying, like, having my weekends, and like I don't really put my personal life on Instagram because I don't want to. So yeah. If you don't see me on Instagram for a few days, it's probably because I've been out doing things, seeing friends, having fun, maybe seeing my family. So I don't really, I haven't actually had a lot of spare time over the last few months, and I quite enjoy that. I don't really want to give up a huge amount of my time, but I miss writing about beauty a lot, actually. So if I do, it will be to write about beauty.
And I think people miss you. Like, no, and I mean, your
voice.
Do you
really? Let's do a poll.
Your voice writing about beauty, because I think there's a lot of gushing. And I think that's something that you never did with beauty. You know,
we definitely tried not to.
Yeah. You'd be like, I love this product and here's why, but it wasn't like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever discovered.
No, because everything cannot be. And this is the thing I think that I find really hard to stomach as well. Well, there isn't a lot of blogging at the moment. Do you not find that? There isn't a lot of blogging.
It's all social media, isn't it?
Yeah, it is all social media.
I've actually started blogging more lately. Yeah. Like, I suppose kind of strategically, because I'm going, nobody's really blogging. So there's a gap.
There is, and also there's a gap in SEO terms as well, which I think is something that maybe there's a lack of technical knowledge, I think, as well, probably within that new generation, where they don't really understand that there's a huge amount they can gain in SEO terms by actually writing strategic content that will get them that long SEO gain. And that was one of the things that I was highly aware of when I was I'm moving my arms around a lot now, you know, where we would write stuff that would be quite strategic, like the 10 foundations you need to know, because people Google that stuff, foundation for oily skin, and then you'd get a long tail evergreen kind of search return on that every single month, so it would keep your figures up. You know, those kind of things are important if you're blogging, and you know, and they're strategic, and it's probably one of the things why, you know, kind of I'm in the job I'm in now. But you need to think about that stuff. But it's all useful, helpful content. What can you do to help your user? So that's one of the things. I mean, it's going back to the whole magazine thing. That's where magazines will go. Putting the user at the centre. Niche, specific topics.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what can we do about your interest that's interesting to you?
Yeah.
That can help you out. Absolutely. I don't think they're going to die in any way, shape or form. The Weir's magazine just came out. So that's a really good example of a luxury magazine in the Irish market that is branded for, you know, a high-end jewellery retailer. But it is also full of content that's relevant to their user persona, who is, you know, kind of a luxury lover. So that's where branded content will go, because those kind of our magazines will go, because those kind of people can, those brands can afford to fund it in a way that probably beleaguered traditional publishers cannot. And that kind of answers the question about, you know, small Irish websites too. Although I think Image has made huge strides actually in the last number of years. It's done some really fantastic things. And its website is really improving.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and there's other things as well. I think people are determined to assume that magazines will die, print media will die, but it won't, because it's all about expanding your reach and your brand pillars, and going into events is a really clever way to make money, and, you know, going into other things like that. So it's not just about copy sales at the end of the day. Ad revenue is definitely dying, but ad revenue in terms of page rates for pure ads, not in terms of branded content. You have to be clever. Anyone who wants to work on a magazine these days or in print needs to have a commercial head on their shoulders. They need to be savvy. They need to be able to think of commercial ideas that can be sold to a brand.
Yeah. Or, you know, even to be able to think of really clever editorial ideas that can become commercial. That's the thing.
Like, absolutely.
I remember one of the first pieces of branded content that I saw and thought, like years ago, and thought that's really good, was on Into the Gloss, like way before they started Glossier. when they did a campaign for Gucci's, one of Gucci's unisex fragrances, and they essentially interviewed a man and a woman who were in a couple. They were both beautiful. They had beautiful photographs of them. They asked them where they met and how their relationship had grown. And there was one line in each interview about the Gucci fragrance.
Yeah.
But I read it because I was like, I want to see what these beautiful people met each other, and they're really hot, and like they're in love.
That's really good brand of content.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really smart. Whereas I think a lot of the time, like here, if you see a branded content for a perfume, it historically has tended to be an entire page about some, like, all the things somebody loves from
It's an advertorial. Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's boring.
Work.
Yeah, and that doesn't offer anything to
anybody. Often brand ego gets in the way there, but a lot of brands are starting to really understand the value of branded content. So, and I actually love coming up with those ideas and talking to brands about them. So the issue before last in House and Home, we did a piece. It was like 100 things under 100 you need for your house. And we sold 3 right-hand pages into that in a photo shoot into Primark. And it was styled, Leslie Ellie Juliet styled it. She did a gorgeous job on it. But everything on those pages was from Penneys. But it fitted seamlessly into the feature. It looked gorgeous and it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff that works really, really nicely. Not out of place, not advertising, not branded, no logos anywhere. Mm-hmm. Just when you read the credits, you went, oh, look, that's all from Penneys. And it looked really beautiful. That's the kind of branded content I want to do. And in the current issue that's just about to come out next week. Hello me, I'm just blowing my own trumpet here. But I love doing this kind of stuff.
This is
House & Home. Yes, we have sold in a DPS for a lighting brand. And it is divine. So panelled walls were made. And all of the lighting is hung.
I saw a little behind the scenes.
Yeah, I probably put it up.
Who was styling it?
Leslie Ellie styled it again. I love working with her because she's great. And it all looks fabulous. And it's really, really nice and styled really nicely. So the kind of thing that you'd be creating anyway as an interiors magazine. Here's 10 lights we love, but it's sold to one lighting brand.
Yeah, and lovely because you get to be creative.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And you're not, because I think 10 years ago the lighting brand would have come on the shoot.
They would have,
and gone, like, we want this to be in the centre and this has to be,
and then we want our logo here, right?
We want our logo there.
There's no logos in any
and
of this stuff.
Can we get Brian in because he's on our sales board?
But what I must point out, and this is incredibly important, that is always promotion on the top of these things, because they are branded content. They are promoted items they are sold in. And that's something that print has to observe and does observe and never doesn't observe, because we have to. It's the law.
Yeah. I wonder would it wash if you just did like hashtag I work with Lights Are Us.
No.
I hate that so much.
No, it's no problem to do this stuff. I think also people have to get over the shame that they feel about being paid. There's no shame. It's no problem. I think, you know, if you're worried about what you should and shouldn't declare, just tell people what you're doing. There's no problem.
Yeah. Like nobody has ever been pissed off with you for being honest.
No,
unless you're going,
not.
I need to confess something really bad that I did. You know what I mean?
This is, again, this is fashion and beauty. It's what you do for your living. Just be really matter of fact and upfront about what you're doing. And there is no need to ever pretend about any of this stuff. You know, there really isn't.
Just be yourself.
Yeah, well, look, that sounds really simplistic. But if you feel like you're doing something wrong,
you probably are.
Yeah, well, just let people know what you're doing. It really isn't. It really isn't a big deal.
Yeah. Well, what a decisive note to end on.
Mm.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to pop into our glamorous studio. This is where I was going to say, where can people catch up with you online?
They can catch up with me mostly on Instagram at Kirsty McDermott. And I'm K-I-R-S-T-I-E, which I had a row with an IT man about yesterday.
Oh, and you're at K-I-R-S-T-I-E on Twitter, and you frequently get tweets for Kirsty Alley, don't you?
I do, and Kirsty Alsop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Kirsty Alsop, that story last week about how she flies in business.
Look,
and makes
I got embroiled in that row. I kind of didn't blame her. I got embroiled in that row. Well, I didn't personally, but I just kept getting added in it. And at the end of it, I was like, oh God, I'm going to mute her.
It was actually too funny because she was basically saying that she feels like she needs to instill in her children the lesson that you have to like earn your way into business class. And she and her husband go in business class and they make them go in like steerage.
It's gas.
And a big thanks to all of you for listening to How to Be Sound, for telling your friends, which I hope you've done, for leaving good reviews, which I also hope you've done. If you haven't, please do leave a review on iTunes because it takes 2 minutes and it really, really helps me. How to Be Sound is recorded, edited and produced by Liam Geraghty, whose own podcast, Meet Your Maker, is currently riding high on the success of a nomination in the 2018 New York Festival's International Radio Awards for the episode Pulling Out All the Stops, which you can find at meetyourmaker.ie. And if you have a spare 89 cent a month, please consider pledging it to me on patreon.com/howtobesound. I promise I will try and make it worth your while. Until next time.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.